from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Propaganda and stubborn ignorance has it that the advance of capitalism benefits only the rich. But the evidence refutes it.
This is your host, Scott Bertrand, and that's the late Dr. Walter E. Williams. We'll hear more from him later on from a previous lecture on entrepreneurship given here at Hillsdale College. Our first guest on today's program is Dr. Paul Marino, William and Bernice Grucock Chair in Constitutional History, Professor of History, and Dean of Social Sciences at Hillsdale College. Dr. Marino, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
We talk today about the new online course from Hillsdale College, now available at online.hillsdale.edu, and it is on Civil Rights in American History, a 9-course series, now available, as I said, at online.hillsdale.edu. Dr. Marino is one of your professors leading those lectures. He does 3 of those lectures for us in this online course. Tell us a little bit about this course, you know, as a whole. What is this Civil Rights in American History trying to cover for people?
Well, the Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s and 60s is maybe the most important social movement and cultural movement in American history, because in that effort to vindicate what were the, you know, understood to be the civil rights of African Americans in the 19th century, we really set off a whole rights revolution. Lots of other groups in America began to make the same kinds of claims using the same tactics and vocabulary. The women's rights movement, the elderly, you know, criminal defendants, I mean, one group after another. So it really shaped what's often referred to as identity politics, as we understand it today.
We go back early. Dr. Kevin Porteous, who's been on the program before, talks about civil rights in the American founding and the ideology of slavery. Dr. Lucas Morrell, who's doing some work for us at the Kirby Center in Washington, D.C., talks about a few things in his courses. David Azarad is also with us talking about identity politics today. But your courses, the 3 that you teach in this online course, start with, at least the first of the 3 chronologically, with the 14th Amendment. What was the 14th Amendment? What do we talk about in that course?
Yeah, the interesting, the Constitution refers to citizens in several places, like the president and senators have to be citizens of the United States for a particular period of time, but it never defines who is a citizen or what civil rights are. It doesn't use the language of civil rights at all. So all of a sudden, almost from scratch, after slavery was abolished, members of Congress had to come up with some definition of these terms, and they had very little to work with. So the 14th Amendment begins mostly in reaction to the Dred Scott decision. The Supreme Court had recently said that blacks, even if they were free, could not be citizens of the United States. And the 14th Amendment says that if you're born or born in the United States or naturalized, you're a citizen of the United States and of the state in which you live. And then based upon the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which defined a list of what civil rights were, mostly the right to make contracts and to enforce them, you know, the things that slaves were, you know, the rights that were withheld from them. The right to marry, of course, would be a crucial civil right. The right to inherit property and to have access to the courts. Fundamental, basic things like that, the rights of citizens were defined. So the 14th Amendment is best understood as an attempt to make permanent this earlier statute, the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
And then moving on, the very next course is on Reconstruction, Segregation, and Disenfranchisement. What do we talk about there?
Yes, the 15th Amendment added the right to vote as a way that once Reconstruction was over, and especially once the Union military forces were out of the South, given the fact that whites were a majority in almost every southern state, some protection so that blacks could protect their own rights, and the right to vote was considered to be the key to that. So that was the last piece of Reconstruction. Unfortunately, if you read the 15th Amendment, it really doesn't give anybody the right to vote. It simply says you can't be deprived of the right to vote on the basis of race, and there are plenty of ways around that. There's what people refer to as proxies for race, literacy tests and poll taxes and all that. So most southern states by the end of the 19th century, it took a while. You know, it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't until the 1890s that the system of segregation and disfranchisement was put into place. It's interesting because today you find many of those same devices of not taking race explicitly into account, mm-hmm. but being able to achieve racial results is the basis of a lot of affirmative action programs today.
The third course that you teach for us here is on the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the rise of affirmative action. Let's take the first part of that first. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, watershed moment for our country. What does that do at that point?
Yeah, that finally ended formal segregation in that's called places of public accommodation, especially hotels, restaurants, railroad cars, and things like that. And this was undoing a lot of the interpretation of the 14th Amendment, especially by the Supreme Court in the late 19th century. Most people know the case of Plessy against Ferguson, where the court said that separate but equal was acceptable. And ironically, the Congress in the Civil Rights Act wasn't enforcing the 14th Amendment. Section 5 of that amendment gives Congress the power to enforce it. But Congress said in 1964 they were regulating commerce. They claimed that this was their power to do things by the Interstate Commerce Clause, which ever since the New Deal had pretty much been their license to do everything. So that was a little bit disingenuous and kind of, you know, perverted the act. Another one, the most important title of it was Title VII, which extended to private employment. This is the non-discrimination provision that just about every employer in the United States is covered by. Mm-hmm. And as interpreted by the court in the 1970s, began to be morph into affirmative action.
The second part of that, the rise of affirmative action. Is the rise of affirmative action congruous at all with the idea of equal treatment under the law?
Yeah. Equal treatment was the way that discrimination was understood in Congress in 1964. That discrimination was an intentional act. You know, an employer or a landlord or whoever had to have, you know, a malicious, invidious motive. And he had to treat individuals differently because of their race. But affirmative action arose by bureaucrats in the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the court said that intent doesn't matter. As long as the outcome is disparate in racial terms, as long as there is what's called a disparate impact, if you use a test to hire people or to admit them to college, things like that, as long as the outcomes, as long as the results are unequal, then this discrimination is assumed. You know, you can justify it. You can prove that there's necessary for your business or something like that. But the burden of proof is on the person who's accused of discriminating.
Are we still in courts today litigating the meaning and the language of the Civil Rights Act?
Oh, absolutely. In every sphere. Employment and housing, for instance, the disparate impact standard was only recently adopted by the Obama administration in terms of public housing discrimination. Harvard is facing a lawsuit now, discrimination against Asian Americans, especially in the room that they try to make for blacks and Hispanics. The court in the late 1980s began to tighten up the disparate impact standard in employment, and when they did that, Congress amended the Civil Rights Act in 1991 to write the disparate impact standard into law. So, yeah, every day court cases are trying to grapple with what's the meaning of unequal treatment and discrimination and civil rights.
Talking with Dr. Paul Marino, who teaches three classes in the online course Civil Rights and American History, now available at online.hillsdale.edu. It's an opportune time for this to be released, of course, as we look at what's happening in the country over the past 12 months or so. How do you think that taking this course for our listeners and being in the ones that you lecture specifically might help them better understand what's happening today?
Yeah, my focus is on sort of black-white relations, and that's a central problem in American history. But citizenship now is increasingly, you know, bound up in the question of immigration, especially illegal immigration, and the demographics of the United States are changing so much where, you know, Hispanics, if you take them as one group, you know, became the largest minority group in America some years ago. And the demographic projections that were headed towards becoming a majority-minority country. So I think that dimension of citizenship is sort of what the future of this belongs to.
Dr. Paul Marino, joined by Dr. Kevin Porteous, Dr. Lucas Morrell, and Dr. David Azarad for this online course with an introduction by Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arn, Civil Rights in American History. It's available now at online.hillsdale.edu. Dr. Marino, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Oh, great to join you. Thanks very much.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Daniel Halpern about common myths and lesser-known facts about COVID-19. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR has teamed up with Robert and Courtney Stone for Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans for their service. The holidays are a particularly difficult time for veterans, and a portion of the proceeds from Operation Holiday Salute goes to help our local homeless veterans, treating them with respect, dignity, and appreciation. This holiday season, Robert and Courtney Stone want to thank the men and women who have served in the armed forces with Operation Holiday Salute and KCNR.
Dan's Optical would like to pay special tribute to our veterans who exemplify in their duties the spirit of Christmas with the giving of their service to our country. Let us recognize the service and their sacrifices and take the opportunity to thank all the talented and dedicated veterans for their commitment to our country by wishing them and their families a very Merry Christmas.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Many accidents are caused by worn wiper blades. Let's face it, it's just uncomfortable when you're driving in the rain, snow, fog, and everything else in between with worn blades. At Premier Oil Change, when you buy one wiper blade, you get the second blade free. Yeah. Now through January 15th, you buy one wiper blade and get the second one free for as little as $14.99. At Premier Oil Change, we make maintaining your car easy. There's no need for an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Just pull in, enjoy a free beverage, and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform a comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park. And our newest location in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home with a friendly oil change.
Did you know that the City of Redding has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Redding area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Redding.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, KCNR1460.com, and AM 1460 has teamed up with Golden Valley Bank for Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans for their service, and a portion of the proceeds goes to help out local homeless veterans. Golden Valley Bank at 250 Hempstead Drive, Suite 100, creates a truly unique local banking experience. Talk to our relationship banker today at 222-4000. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
As Shasta County gradually reopens for business, we can all do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask when in public. Cloth face coverings help reduce the spread of germs by preventing the release of droplets when someone speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Wash your face covering often, ideally after each use or at least daily. Wash with detergent and hot water and dry on a hot cycle. Here is Shasta County Health Officer Dr. Karen Ramstrom.
Remember, wearing a face covering is not a replacement for physical distancing, frequent hand washing, and staying home when sick. Your mask protects me, and my mask protects you. Together, we can stop the spread.
For more information, including how to make your own cloth face covering, go to ShastaReady.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. To get an email every time there's a new episode, enter your email address at radiohour.hillsdale.edu. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Dr. Daniel Halperin. He's an adjunct professor at the University of North Carolina Giddings School of Global Public Health in Chapel Hill. He's conducted research for over 40 years, and his new book pamphlet is available at Amazon.com. Facing COVID Without Panic, 12 Common Myths and 12 Lesser-Known Facts About the Pandemic, Clearly Explained by an Epidemiologist. Dr. Halperin, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing.
When we again first heard about COVID, there was a lot of talk about surface transmission, and we had to wipe things down, and we were scared about touching gas pumps that may have been touched by someone who was infected by the virus. Is that surface transmission still an issue, continue to be an issue, or are we really talking about this as more of a respiratory illness?
There still seems to be a lot of concern about this. I'm actually in Europe at the moment, and you can't go into most stores or other establishments until you, use hand sanitizer. And I remember in the States a couple of months ago being in a Trader Joe's, and they wouldn't let people bag their own bags inside the store. You had to do it outside the store. Just endless examples. Some of them seem relatively trivial, although, for example, there are people that are very sensitive. They have very sensitive skin. I've actually met a few people that say they can hardly go shopping because they're forced to put these hand sanitizers on, which can really irritate their skin. So it's not a completely trivial issue. And it actually has some pretty big financial implications. For example, the hotel industry and even Airbnbs are now mandated to leave hotel rooms completely vacant for as much as 3 days before the guests can come in, on this idea that somehow somebody touched something in the room and the virus will live for a few days. So, yeah, this what I call essentially a myth, does live on. Scientists who are looking at this data concur that it's a very, very small percentage of transmission, if that.
Dr. Halperin, so if it's not, if those cases are somewhat rare, what are the situations that are perhaps most likely to transmit coronavirus, COVID? What are the situations that we should avoid, if at all possible?
So the great bulk of transmission is happening in closed indoor spaces with poor ventilation, where people spend a lot of time essentially breathing each other's air. That's why we see so many infections in nursing homes, in prisons, in meatpacking plants, in situations where people are relatively close together, at least in the same room, and there's not good ventilation of air, the windows aren't open, it's cold, and meatpacking plants is cold. And so that's where we're seeing, a lot of the, of course, earlier on cruise ships, those are the situations to particularly avoid. What's not going to cause transmission, or which is extremely unlikely, if at all possible, is walking by someone on the street, if they're wearing a mask or not. That's not how this virus is spread. I have a colleague who, interestingly, is one of the main advocates for mask wearing, but she, when she gives talks, she tells people, you don't need to wear a mask outdoors unless you're in a really, really crowded situation. You know, the virus is not radioactive. It's not like you walk past someone on the street and they get the virus from you.
What about children? There's been a real focus on schools here recently, and it appears that the data is making a difference here in at least some places in allowing schools to reopen for in-person education. Do we know why there is apparently a low risk of children infecting others?
That's one of the other myths that one of the other 12 myths that I mentioned in the book discuss. It's kind of surprising because for most respiratory infections, including the other coronaviruses that cause the common colds that kids, we all know how kids get those all the time. Mm-hmm. There was an assumption earlier on that this coronavirus would probably be like those, and that it would be a situation where these kids would have running noses and coughing, and they would be spreading it like wildfire to each other and then to the teacher and other adults and so on. And anyway, to make a longer story short, this does not appear to be the case for various reasons, biological and other reasons, why kids are, in fact, much less likely to get infected with this virus. And if they do get infected, they're also much less likely to transmit the virus to others. And by the way, the main reason for that appears to be that at least 80% of people under 20 who do get infected are asymptomatic. They don't have symptoms. So some of them may have quite a bit of virus in their nasal tract, so they'll be positive on a PCR test, but they're not sneezing, they're not coughing, so therefore they're less likely to spread the virus to others, and that's in those that are even infected in the first place. The numbers of deaths, thankfully, have been really incredibly low. They get a lot of attention in the media when it does happen, but in fact, many more kids will die this year of just the flu than from the coronavirus.
Dr. Halperin, when we look at some of the metrics and the data, and we look at the number of deaths, or we look at the number of cases, or we look at the positivity rate from the tests, what's the data points that we should really be focusing on when we look at them?
Oh, boy. To take hours to unpack that question. It's so complicated. There's so many factors involved. This is where some of the certainty starts to fall apart, and mm-hmm. where we're really struggling, the scientific community. And although that isn't known either by, I think, most people, there's just most people, I think, feel that the test is sort of a pretty reliable test, and you're either positive or you're not. Mm-hmm. Yes or no, you know? And in fact, terms will be much more complicated than that. There are certainly false negative tests, people that actually are becoming infected but don't yet have enough viral load, so they don't test positive.
Right.
So we mistakenly tell them they're not infected when they are. But there are also quite a few false positive results that are happening. That's because no test is perfect. And the problem is when you start testing in populations where the actual incidence of the virus is quite low, and this is happening now as we're greatly expanding testing. We're not just testing people with symptoms. There's a lot of testing now of people that don't have any symptoms, even people that weren't necessarily exposed to someone who was infected. When you start testing in populations where the actual incidence of COVID is low, you're quite likely to have more false positive results than true positive results. And that's why many researchers earlier in the year were arguing against doing large-scale testing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so complicated. I've actually been with some other colleagues looking at other indicators like deaths and hospitalization, and deaths as a proportion of total cases has gone way down since the spring, thankfully, and for various reasons.
Dr. Daniel Halperin, an adjunct professor at the University of North Carolina Getting School of Global Public Health in Chapel Hill, and the author of Facing COVID Without Panic, 12 Common Myths and 12 Lesser-Known Facts About the Pandemic, clearly explained by an epidemiologist. Dr. Halperin, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Sure, my pleasure.
Up next, we talk with Hillsdale philosophy professor Lee Cole about the German philosopher Robert Schwemann. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
We are Women of Vision. We have exciting news. We will no longer be on for Tuesday nights at 6 p.m.
Our new home will be with North State Now, last Thursday of the month, starting January 2021.
North State Now is the magazine-formatted show where every Thursday night a different host highlights people, places, entertainment, local heroes, art, and Women of Vision.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women. Join us for North State Now, last Thursday of the month, 6 to 7 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM.
Hey guys, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite, your authorized DISH retailer. Check your mailbox. Among those beautiful Christmas cards may be a gift card from B&T Satellite and DISH. Let us save you money this holiday season. There is no guarantee this offer will be around next year. Act now. With over 60 years of combined experience, let us, your locally owned TV guys, help you. We know what we are doing. You can trust us. Make your holidays a little brighter with a gift card from B&T Satellite and DISH. We at B&T Satellite wish you and your family a savings Merry Christmas. Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
B&T Satellite is a DISH authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. For all things Hillsdale College for potential students, alumni, and friends of Hillsdale, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Dr. Lee Cole, Associate Professor of Philosophy here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Cole, thanks for joining us.
You bet, Scott. Thanks for having me.
So having some conversations preparing for our visit, you sort of offhandedly mentioned that you consider Robert Spemann, who recently passed, while he was alive, to be the greatest living philosopher. And so, of course, we've got to talk about Robert Spemann now on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. So who was he, for those who don't know? And I'm just going to guess it could be a vast majority of our audience that don't know who Robert Spemann is. Who was he? What was his area of study within philosophy?
Sure. So Robert Spemann was a German Catholic philosopher. He was born in 1927. He had a kind of interesting background. His parents were quite committed, serious atheists, and then actually converted to Catholicism shortly after Spemann's birth. And then things take perhaps an even stranger turn. His mother dies when Robert is very young, and his dad actually decides to become a priest. I can only imagine what that sort of upbringing would be like to have a father who is a Catholic priest. And Spemann went on to study philosophy and theology and history and literature. He was liberally educated, and then ultimately ended up teaching at a variety of universities in Germany, at I believe Heidelberg. I want to say Stuttgart. I think he was emeritus for roughly the last 25 years of his life.
Now that we know a bit about him, what makes his work so notable?
In terms of his interests, I mean, part of what I think makes Spemann great, and what makes really any philosopher great, is the kind of universality or catholicity, lowercase c, the scope and range of their thinking. And the depth that comes with that. So it feels a bit artificial to simply specify Spemann's what areas of specialization. But I think he's sort of thinking within the nexus of nature, what nature is, and then what human nature is, what the human being is in light of this vision of nature. And then always kind of close to his mind are various ethical implications for how we think about the nature of the human being. And his thought is one that's really deeply rooted in the tradition. Mm-hmm. You see citations of authors from, you know, almost every century from page to page as you read him. But you also have the sense that he's speaking to the most significant questions of our time. So one minute he's quoting Plotinus, and the next minute he's reflecting on euthanasia or ecology or something like that.
What qualities, in your mind, make for a great philosopher?
I think a great philosopher offers a kind of depth of insight that also is paired with a kind of scope or a range, and I think those things go together. I think, unfortunately, we often in our minds today have this vision of a great philosopher as something like a master chess player, except in the arena of ideas. So they're very good at debating, or they're very sharp. And I've become more and more disillusioned with that as a model of philosophical thinking. I think Plato is a better model, who sees the relationship between philosophy and poetry and myth as more of a vision of the whole. So it's really having a sense of the whole and the relationship to the parts, which also lends that philosopher, if I can use this image, it's a strange one, it gives their mind a kind of rightness of touch, right? They're sensitive to reality. They actually can be attentive to reality. Reality can show itself to them with a kind of dimensionality and vividness, in part because of the intellectual resources that they bring with them. I think another division we can employ here, besides kind of scope and depth, is also, as I mentioned earlier, kind of bringing together the historical, the tradition's reflections on these matters with the contemporary. It's another, I think, seduction of contemporary philosophy, that philosophy is like the modern sciences, it's progressed, it's advanced, and you just have to think hard about particular problems. And I think that's a tremendously naive understanding of how human knowing works. And in Shvemon, you see someone who has such great facility, right? All the great authors are there for him. They're sort of like sitting on the shelf of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's not a slave to them, right? They actually equipped him and freed him to have a kind of dexterity when he thinks about the pressing issues of the times.
Dr. Lee Kollwitz, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Hillsdale College, talking about the philosopher Robert Shvemon. So what attracted you to his theories? And is it something where, I'm not a philosopher, something where you read and then agree with his thinking or are awed by his ability to sort of, as you mentioned previously, draw in all these other kind of theories and thinkers into his line of thinking? What was so appealing?
I found out about Robert Shvemon. I mean, Shvemon died recently as an old man. He was in his 90s, and yet his works really didn't start trickling into English until the last decade. And now a number of his major works have been published in English. And unfortunately, I can't read German. I would give great sums of money to be able to read German, but I can't. And the opportunity for learning it is growing thinner by the day. A friend of mine and a philosopher whom I deeply respect, David C. Schindler, who taught at Villanova when I was there, when he was a young professor, he put me on to Shvemon. I didn't realize it at the time, but he and his wife were actually translating his essays and were going to eventually to publish his kind of collected works.
He's just trying to sell a book.
Yeah, right. Well, I did in fact buy it. And he suggested that he was really a kind of great thinker. And it was maybe just a few years ago that I picked up a volume of his of Shvemon's Essays in Anthropology. And so what drew me in, in part the kind of familiarity I had with the past, and so I could see like touchstones in his thinking that I was recognizing.
Final question for Dr. Lee Cole on the philosopher Robert Shvemon. Do you teach or do you use Shvemon in your classes, or is there a specific type of student that you have to which you would say, oh, you should read Robert Shvemon's writings?
Right. So thanks to the Collegiate Scholars Program at Hillsdale, I was actually given the opportunity to teach a class on Shvemon to the Collegiate Scholars students. I actually co-taught the class with Dr. Gaetano in the history department. And so we read one of Shvemon's great works, his work Persons, mm-hmm. A reflection on what it means to be a person and how persons are different from other natural things or just things in general. And so we read that work and a few of Shvemon's essays. Part of what I enjoy about him is his work is not laden by technical terms or neologisms or is not hermetically sealed off in the way that many mm-hmm. philosophers are. With that being said, his work still remains difficult, as all sort of profound reflections are. And it's helpful to actually have the tradition in mind and have a lot of conceptual resources that you're bringing to the text, so you're part of a shared conversation. I think the students in our seminar had a really significant formative experience, and those students continue to talk about Shvemon to this day. And at times I ask them what they're reading or what they're studying, and I've heard students say, well, I'm reading this figure and they're talking about this. And I said, well, how are you finding it? And they said, well, it's good, but it seems sort of like a lesser version of what Shaiman was doing in Persons or this or that. But I'll say this. There are a number of, for lack of a better term, sort of conservative philosophers that people associated with Hillsdale would recognize, a Roger Scruton, for example, or Alistair McIntyre. I think Shaiman is less known, but I think he has every bit of a right to be known as well as those particular figures.
Dr. Lee Cole, Associate Professor of Philosophy, talking about the philosopher Robert Shaiman. Dr. Cole, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, we hear portions of a lecture delivered at Hillsdale College by the late Walter E. Williams. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 7 with the Sue McClain News Hour. I'll have your up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com.
The elders of our community, a vast collection of truly extraordinary men and women that have led commendable lives after working hard, raising families, serving their communities, and some serving our country, they're left at risk and alone. There's a growing number of elders who are at risk and socially isolated with little or no support, often losing their health and independence and becoming vulnerable to many forms of fraud and abuse. But because of the dedication of Shining Care, their future is safe and secure. Shining Care gives compassionate support, expert guidance, and assistance to at-risk elders as well as their loved ones to maintain their safety and well-being. Through the various free programs of Shining Care, our community's elders are able to become safe and again thrive. For assistance or to support their mission, visit shiningcare.org.
The Backbone Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Backbone Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. The Backbone Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
This podcast is for storytellers of all kinds. We discuss everything from the hero's journey to how to slog through that pesky middle section of your book. From filling out your author's toolbox to answering your questions about the craft and the industry. From magic to mayhem.
In December, we're covering frequently asked questions by you, our listeners, here in Reading and worldwide. And January brings us pearls from the masters of the industry. We'll analyze what advice we like, what we take, and what we disagree with.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. On December 1st, economist and academic Dr. Walter E. Williams died at the age of 84. He was a syndicated columnist, a professor of economics at George Mason University, and the author of numerous books. He also was a friend of Hillsdale College, giving numerous speeches and lectures on behalf of Hillsdale. Today we go back to 2005 for a lecture delivered by Walter E. Williams here on Hillsdale College's campus entitled The Entrepreneur as American Hero.
Propaganda and stubborn ignorance has it that the advance of capitalism benefits only the rich. But the evidence that I've already pointed out refutes it. But let's look at more. Rich people have always been able to afford entertainment, but it was the development and marketing of radio and television that made that entertainment accessible to the common man. The rich have never had the drudgery of washing and ironing clothing, beating out rugs, or waxing floors. It was the development and mass production of washing machines, wash and wear clothing, vacuum cleaners, and no wax floors that spared the common man of this drudgery. At one time, only the rich could afford automobiles, telephones, and computers. Now, all but a tiny percentage of Americans enjoy these goods. Today, as it has always been, the direct impetus for technological innovation and progress has been the entrepreneurial search for profits and a competitive economy. At the beginning of the 20th century, life expectancy was 47 years in the United States. At the end, it was 77 years. Deaths from infectious diseases fell from 700 per 100,000 of the population to 50. Agricultural workers during that interval, during that century, fell from 35% of the workforce to 2.5%. Automobile ownership rose from 1% of the population to 91% of the population. Patents granted rose from $25,000 a year to $150,000 a year. And a final statistic, controlling for inflation, household assets rose from $6 trillion in 1945 to $41 trillion in 1998. That has been remarkable progress.
We continue with Dr. Walter E. Williams from Hillsdale College in 2005, talking about Adam Smith's definition of an entrepreneur.
In reference to the motivations of the entrepreneur, Adam Smith, the father of economics, said, and I quote him, "By directing that industry in such a manner as to produce maybe of the what is the greatest value, the entrepreneur intends only his gain, and he is in this, as in many other cases, led by an invisible hand to promote an end which is no part of his intention." That may very well describe an entrepreneur like Thomas Watson, Sr., the founder of IBM. Many of the technological gains previously unimaginable human progress are a direct result of having methods of handling large amounts of data accurately and rapidly. From the 1930s onward, IBM was at the forefront in the development of machinery to do this. The huge benefits that we enjoy and the human progress that has been made as a result of IBM's pioneering work was no part of the intention of Thomas Watson or his successors. They were in it for their own gain, profits.
You are listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. This is Dr. Walter E. Williams from a Hillsdale College lecture back in 2005. Here he defines profit more in depth and talks about how producers make a profit.
Profits has become almost a dirty word. So let me spend just a few minutes talking about the magnitude of profits and the role that profits play in a free society. First, the magnitude. Roughly 6 cents of each dollar that companies take in represent after-tax profits. By far, wages are the largest part of the dollar, representing about 60 cents. As a percentage of 2002 national income, after-tax profits represented about 5% and wages about 71%. Let's spend a moment talking about what might be called normal profits, what an economist would call normal profits. And later, let's talk about the more emotional windfall profits that some people have called obscene profits. Now, normal profit is the opportunity cost of using entrepreneurial abilities in the production of a good. In other words, opportunity cost is what the entrepreneur could have earned in his next best alternative activity, say another business venture. Now, just as wages, rent, and interest must be paid in order to employ the services of labor, land, and capital, normal profits must be paid in order to employ entrepreneurial services. That is, the entrepreneurial services is the resource that makes decisions, innovates, and takes risk. This person, this resource, must be paid in order to get it to produce goods. Now, whether an entrepreneur makes profit depends essentially on two things. The first is whether he's producing a good that consumers value and are willing to pay for. The second is whether he's using the scarce resources of society in the most efficient manner in order to produce the good.
In our final excerpt from this 2005 lecture from Dr. Walter E. Williams, he talks about the role that profits play in telling producers what to produce and how to make their products.
Let's look at just one tiny example of the role that profits play in providing the incentives to produce what the consumer wants. Remember 1985, when Coca-Cola introduced the new Coke. Pepsi-Cola president Roger Enrico called it the Edsel of the 80s. Now, who made Coca-Cola went back to the old Coke? Now, who made them bring back the old Coke? Was it Congress, the courts, or the president, or some government officials that were acting in the interests of soda-drinking Americans? No way. It was the specter of negative profits, namely losses, that convinced Coca-Cola to bring back the old Coke. Thus, one role of profits is to discover what consumers want. And the other role of profits is that if producers make mistakes, give them incentives to correct them. Profits also force producers to employ resources wisely. If producers waste inputs, their production costs will be higher. In order to cover their production costs, they must charge higher prices, higher than what consumers are willing to pay, or higher than the prices that their competitors are charging. After a while, the company will make unsustainable losses and go out of business. As a result, the company going bankrupt or out of business makes the company's resources available to someone else who will put them to wiser use. Now, this process is short-circuited if the government offers bailouts in the forms of guaranteed loans, subsidies, or restrictions on competitive products from abroad, such as tariffs and quotas. Government help enables companies to continue wasting resources.
That was the late Dr. Walter E. Williams from 2005 delivering a lecture here at Hillsdale College entitled The Entrepreneur as American Hero. Dr. Williams passed away December 1st at the age of 84. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Paul Marino talking about Hillsdale's new online course on civil rights in American history. We talk with Dr. Daniel Halpern about his booklet on COVID-19. Dr. Lee Cole told us all about the philosopher Robert Spemann.
And we heard the late Dr. Walter E. Williams from his lecture here at Hillsdale back in 2005. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or on Facebook. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
HGA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State. state.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to